Good morning. We have a good crowd today. So glad each of you are with us. As you know, we're in the middle of a series called It's All About Love. And we looked last week at love is not easily angered, how anger is the most misunderstood and misapplied emotion out there. And we're going to finish up that topic today. But before we get to that, I want to invite you back tonight at 5 o'clock p.m. We have our monthly singing. Hope you can come back at 5 and make a joyful noise unto the Lord with us. And next Sunday morning, we're going to be having our third annual congregational prayer meeting. And we're really looking forward to that, and I hope you can join us. And then that Sunday night on the 11th, we're going to be looking at the second part of Hell and Why I Don't Want to Go There. That's November 11th at 5 o'clock p.m. So let's get back to our message on love is not easily angered. This lesson just completely ties together with last week. So in order to maintain continuity, and for some of you who perhaps were not here last time, I want to take a moment to do a brief review. The problem, as we mentioned last week, is not with anger itself. That's just a symptom, but with the fact that people tend to go to one extreme or the other. They tend to be like turtles or like skunks. Turtles clam up and they just sort of swallow their anger, while skunks wind up just letting it all out. They just stink up the place. They blow up like Mount Vesuvius. And of course, when that happens, it's difficult to deal with those sort of angry outbursts. And so the question comes, how do you go about taming your anger? There's six R's that will help you to remember this formula. And we looked at the first three in part one. First, you need to resolve to manage your anger and recognize that it needs to be managed and that anger is not bad. In fact, in relationships, healthy relationships often have a good amount of conflict. It's just in healthy relationships they learn how to work through and resolve that conflict. So you have to resolve to manage your anger. You have to remember the cost of what happens when you don't and how you hurt people with your words or angry outbursts. And then you need to reflect before you react. So important to Thomas Jefferson talked about counting to 10 before you say anything back. One person told me last week that they needed to count to 1,000 before they said anything back. And so that's what we looked at in part one. Now, today, we're going to look at the next three R's, where you need to learn how to release your anger appropriately, repattern your thinking, and then rely upon God in the process. So, point number four is resolve to release your anger appropriately. Remember, Paul said, in your anger, do not sin. So, again, anger is not a sin. It just can lead to sin. So that tells us that there is a right way to release your anger. There is a helpful way and a harmful way, a sinful way and a non-sinful way. There's a right way to do it, and it all has to do with choices. Don't make the excuse that you can't help it or that's just the way I am. That's just a bunch of garbage. These are choices that we make, and we make either good choices or bad choices. We have to choose to release our anger appropriately. Now, we need to, in this resolving to release, understand that pop psychology is often wrong. There is a sitcom, a comedy about a fella who is not a psychic, but he claims he's a psychic, and other people sort of take him seriously oftentimes, and it creates for some rather comedic relief. It's really sad when somebody claims to be something that they're not, or they're wrong, but other people think they're right. And that's what we have with a lot of modern psychology. That's why I'm so thankful to have God's word that can keep us on the straight and narrow when it comes to these things. It's very popular to talk in circles about anger and anger management about what they call the anger bucket. And the idea is that everybody has this anger bucket within them, and depending upon your past and your background and what you've been through, how much anger you swallowed, that some people have bigger anger buckets than others. And the thought is that you have to do anything possible to vent your anger, to get it out, to go down to the basement and just let that punching bag have it. And then you feel better because you've let it out. The idea is it's good to express your anger in those kind of ways, because otherwise you're likely to express it in ways that might be harmful. Well, that sounds reasonable on the surface. In fact, this is so prevalent that modern psychology has come up with something known as the primal scream, which is this method of having people that have neurosis and difficulties to just encourage them just to scream at the top of their lungs, just as loud as they can and for as long as they need until they get some sort of relief from the anger that they're feeling. The problem with all of this is it doesn't work. It is not effective if you don't deal with the source of the anger. Truth of the matter is, you don't have a bucket of anger that you've just got to empty all the time. You've got a factory of anger. And as long as the factory that is causing the anger is still working and is productive, you can express your anger and fly off the handle and hit a punching bag till you're just exhausted. If the thoughts that are feeding the anger are still there, you're just going to produce more and more anger. This is true whether you're talking about adults in a marriage or even children that are really angry and aggressive toward one another. Research has proven over and over again that aggression only produces more aggression. Anger just simply produces more anger. Getting the anger off your chest doesn't reduce it. It actually can create more as it tends to escalate. Solomon said this in Proverbs 15 and verse 1. He said, "A soft or gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." And we know that from our own experience. We know that the louder you get, the louder they get, right? You start raising your voice, and then they compensate by raising theirs, and then it just tends to escalate over time. If you want to de-escalate your anger, you don't say, "Well, I just need to have this primal scream, and if I'm screaming at you, well, so what? I just need this to kind of decompress." No, 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 no. If you start talking loudly, the other person responds, it just escalates the situation. The key is not to talk loud and fast, but to talk low and slow. And it's interesting, you know, whose anger is quieted? Well, first, you quiet your own. When you are determined to have a normal tone of voice and to talk low and slow, it actually quiets your own anger on the inside. Then when the other person senses that you're talking calmly and low and slow, then it calms them down as well. We need to focus on de-escalating our anger, not in any way escalating our anger. I really think the idea of an anger bucket is completely the wrong analogy. You don't put out a fire by letting the fire spread. No, you get rid of a fire by getting rid of the source of the fire. You starve it of oxygen, or maybe you get rid of the kindling. Solomon said, when there is no wood, or where there is no wood, the fire goeth out. That's exactly right. You need to figure out what's underneath and triggering this anger and deal with that if you really want to stop the anger. There's actually three ways that just don't work that people often resort to when they find their anger is triggered. First thing I want to suggest is don't suppress it. What do I mean by that? What does suppression mean? I mean, don't stuff it. Don't swallow your anger. We're back to the turtle again. Because if you do that, it's a little bit like shaking a Coke bottle. When you go to open it up, it's likely to explode. And the problem is, it doesn't often direct its fury at the one that has triggered the initial anger. You often involve yourself in what's known as dumping. It goes sideways, where you take out your anger on innocent third parties, like maybe your children, or coworkers, or family members, even though they may have had nothing to do with the initial thing that made the person angry. So you don't want to suppress it. That's not the answer. And you don't repress it. Now, how's that different from suppressing it? Repressing it is when you say, please lower your voice. And you stop yelling at me. I'm not yelling at you. As you have to kind of close your ears as the person yells at you, telling you that they're not yelling at you. This is where a person is in denial. They are pretending that they're not ticked off, pretending they're not irritated, pretending they're not mad at someone. This idea of pretending something's not real when it is just living in denial. It's repressed anger, and that kind of depressed anger is what leads to depression. Psychologists refer to it sort of as a frozen rage. That's what happens when you swallow your anger. It's not the only cause of depression, but by far the number one cause of depression is swallowing and repressing your anger and not releasing it or dealing with it appropriately. All right, the third thing you don't want to do is to express it inappropriately. Because when you do that, it just creates more, and it often damages the relationship. And we all tend to have our favorite ways of expressing our anger at someone who has angered us, right? Some people do it through sarcasm. And some people are sort of a modern-day Don Rickles or Rodney Dangerfield. They've got this kung fu tongue. They're good at the cold cuts. Oh, I'm so witty. Hey, look what I just did to put you down. You can destroy relationships with sarcasm. It's kind of the death of a thousand cuts. It's not an appropriate way to express anger. The other is manipulation. And this usually comes from somebody who says, I don't get mad, I just get even. Somebody says something to you and you say, that woman will rue the day that she said that about me. I'm going to plot my revenge, and revenge is best served cold. So the idea is you manipulate and you try to get back at someone. It's no better than sarcasm. You come up with some sort of a war plan to get back that would make General Patton proud. And the third is pouting. This goes back to somewhat, again, the idea of the turtle, your merry martyr. When I was a kid, they used to have this song, nobody likes me, everybody hates me, think I'll eat some worms. And it goes through and talks about all these different worms this person is eating. It's a way of just saying, woe is me, trying to get attention. You know, uh-oh, mom's pouting, she's upset. You know, you have to walk on eggshells for fear that you're going to set her off. It's no way to deal with anger as a Christian. None of these things are appropriate. Silent manipulation, stinking up the place, they're all wrong. And some people get angry, usually because they've been hurt, and they engage in just self-destructive, crazy behavior. My husband had an affair, so I'm going to go and have an affair. Really? Didn't you learn in kindergarten that two wrongs don't make a right? It's just amazing what some people will do when they've been hurt or betrayed. Well, I'm just going to go out and get drunk, or I'm going to go out and take some drugs. Oh, that's really going to help. I mean, it just absolutely makes matters worse. And so we certainly need to avoid crazy behavior and resolve to make wise decisions when things have upset us or we've been fearful or frustrated or hurt. So, what does God say about this? What really works? You've heard the saying, confession is good for the soul. Well, obviously, we need to confess our sins, but remember, anger is not a sin by itself. But I highly want to, you know, recommend to you that just like you would confess a sin once you've been convicted you did something wrong, you need to take a moment because, you know, anger is just, the word danger is just one letter short of anger, right? I mean, you're so apt to manage this incorrectly. Take a moment, reflect before you react, and pray. And when you do that, confess first to yourself. Don't be in denial. Recognize, hey, I'm upset about this. I'm angry. And then confess it to God. Say, Lord, I'm really struggling with this. And I want you to remember how important it is to ask God to help you to discern the root cause of your anger. See, anger is like just the top of the iceberg that you can see. There's all these other things underneath it. That's what needs to be dealt with if you're going to handle this appropriately and deal with the source and shut down this sort of anger factory that just continues to produce these negative reactions. And remember, the three typical things that will trigger anger in most people are fear, frustration, and hurt, especially a sense of betrayal. So, if you're a person here today and you don't want to be a mute, a martyr, or a maniac, you don't want to clam up or blow up, you want to demonstrate self-control and deal with your anger in a proper way, what you've got to do is go to the next point. Point number five, the next R, is repattern your mind. You know, how you express your anger, that didn't happen overnight. That's been a long-term pattern. Probably picked it up from a family member, is my guess, if it's negative. You may have picked it up from someone else, but I want you to recognize wherever you picked it up, you weren't born that way. Don't say that's just the way I am. It is not true. Recognize your anger response is a learned response. And here's the good news. Because it's a learned response, you can unlearn it. You can reprogram. You can learn new patterns, new habits of responding to the anger. And the sooner you get a handle on this, the better. What a wonderful thing that with God's help, we can reprogram these sort of reactions. And let me just say this as a cautionary word to parents. One of the reasons why it's so important that you become what sociologists refer to as a transition person, someone that has decided they're going to stop this pattern that has oftentimes gone backwards in generations, you can trace it back, is because at some point somebody needs to say, I'm going to break free from this negative pattern. You know, maybe your dad had angry outbursts and you had to grow up with that as a child. And then when you get married and have your own family, you start doing the same thing to your kids and to your family. And then they learn it from you and you just pass it on and pass it on. At some point, somebody's going to say, I'm going to get off this awful train. I'm going to stop this. I want to do better and be better. And that's exactly what Christ calls us to do. We're told in Romans chapter 12 and verse 2, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but instead be transformed. Have new patterns. How do you do that? By the renewing of your mind. The behavior of the world is you repress, you just sort of deny, or you express, you know, kind of emotionally vomit on people and act like, well, that's just who I am. Or you suppress, you swallow your anger with all the negative consequences that come from that. repattern your mind. Recognize if you change the way you think, you'll change the way you live. And you will change the tendency to respond to anger badly. It's so true. When you act in angry ways, it's because you feel angry. But when you feel angry, it's because you're choosing to think angry, negative thoughts. And if you're going to get rid of a fire, you need to get rid of the fuel. If you're going to get rid of these angry outbursts that cause such difficulties, or the bearing of your anger so that it causes all these problems internally, you have to get back to the source, and it's your thinking. Rick Warren said this, the way you think determines the way you feel, and the way you feel determines the way you act. And so if you're going to change bad behavior, maybe someone's been sort of abusive or they lose their temper and it's causing them difficulties, don't force this by focusing on the behavior. You know, just saying, don't lose my temper, don't lose my temper is probably not going to be very helpful. What you need to do is focus on your thoughts. What are you telling yourself that's making you so upset? Change your thoughts, and then you change your feelings, because your thoughts trigger your feelings, and then those feelings will change your behavior, because the new thoughts can trigger better feelings. So you don't focus on the behavior or even the feelings. It's have enough insight to look beyond all this and figure out what's underneath the surface. It's really true. What you say to yourself, what you believe, and what you think is what triggers and causes what you say, as well as what you do. So that's why you need to confess this to God and ask Him to help you. And don't just say, God, help me with my anger. Say, God, I'm feeling fearful right now. I'm feeling out of control. Help me to be more in control. Or I'm feeling really frustrated, or I'm really hurt by this. And help yourself by asking God to help you deal with the fuel, the source, the oxygen that is feeding the fire of anger within your soul. That's the key, and that's what God calls us to do. To break bad anger habits, what we all need is mental conditioning, which happens by renewing our mind. And one of the best things you can do if you kind of think through all of this properly is analyze, what is it that's triggering my anger? And then avoid those triggers whenever you can and talk yourself through that and keep yourself in control, which is one of the fruits of the Spirit. One of the Proverbs that we read before the lesson of the hour is Proverbs 22, 24, and 25. He says, make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare. The idea seems to be, beware. Anger is contagious. If you're around a bunch of people that are really angry all the time, got a chip on their shoulder, you're going to pick that up because it's a learned response. You take a perfectly normal, sort of sweet young man, and suddenly he joins a gang. And it's not long until his whole disposition has changed and he's out vandalizing property and doing all these terrible things. He's filled with anger because he's in this angry mob. I'll just tell you, I don't know what the solution is, but forcibly incarcerating the huge amounts of people that we do in our culture when they do things they shouldn't do, and putting them in to an environment where they're filled with other people who all did things they shouldn't do, most of them, and they're all very angry, and then they just feed on that anger. And so you let them out of prison instead of learning a lesson. maybe you've done them more harm than good as far as their thought processes. So that's why people tend to repeat crime so often, I fear. We need to understand that who we choose to hang around with is so important in this regard. And it's a national epidemic. I was looking last night at the National Domestic Violence Fact Sheet, and I was just shocked to learn that 10 million people in 2017 wound up being a victim of spousal abuse. And if you include children who are guilty, or not guilty, victims of child abuse, that's 20 people per minute in the United States. Wow, per minute. In most cases, the problem is they've not been taught how to control their anger. And 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men report being victims of severe physical violence by an intimate partner in their lifetime. Wow. People with hot tempers do foolish things. And when you wind up actually physically harming your spouse or your children, reminds me of Proverbs 11:29. The fool who provokes his family to anger will eventually have nothing worthwhile left. Talk about destroying a family and relationships and your reputations. And Paul warns husbands, love your wives. Do not treat them harshly. And one of the ways you can avoid treating someone harshly is to keep it cool and to manage your emotions by managing your thoughts. Now, what we're talking about here is just what happens in the moment. What we really want to do is to, again, deal with the underlying problems and deal with the whole person. We need to rely on God to really repattern our thoughts. Romans 15, verse 5 says, patience and encouragement comes from God. It's not a pill, not a seminar, not a conference. Those all can be helpful. But the ultimate solution to so much of the problems today with anger and rage and, yes, even depression has to do with people wrapping their arms around what it means to being a true disciple. You know, if your relationship with Jesus is kind of wishy-washy, sometimes you're going to be patient and long-suffering, sometimes not. If you're kind of on the fringe in your relationship with Christ, you're going to have problems with anger like most people of the world. We're not talking about superficial love here. We're talking about a supernatural love that can transform a person. Let me describe it this way. If you take a tube of toothpaste, whatever is on the inside comes out when you squeeze it, right? Someone says, well, what comes out when you squeeze a tube of toothpaste? Somebody goes, well, toothpaste, because that's what's inside it. But not necessarily. It could just say Colgate toothpaste on the outside wrapper, and there might be something else in there. Whatever's in there, once you squeeze that tube, it's going to come out. Tension and temper go together. Pressure and anger go together. And when we get kind of squeezed in life, oftentimes that's when we have these outbursts or these inappropriate expressions of anger. And we have to understand how all of these things fit together. If you're filled with God's love, guess what happens when you get squeezed? You're not easily provoked. You're not easily angered, which is what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, because of what you are in the inside. Remember, the fruit of the Spirit is patience, right? And joy and love. And if we can empty ourselves of the things of the world and fill ourselves with the fruit of the Spirit, then when we get under pressure, we tend to respond well, more calmly than we would if we were not. And that comes from really relying upon God to help us be what we ought to be. Because when it comes to God and relying upon Him, He goes right to the heart of the problem. The heart of the problem is a problem of the heart. Because ultimately, it's what's inside of us that comes out. That's why Jesus talked about that if you have a good heart, you'll have good fruits. If you have a good tree, it will produce good fruits. If you have a bad heart, bad tree, it produces evil fruits. Jesus went on to say, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. You see, the tongue is just a ladle from the heart. Sometimes people will let out some explicative in a moment of anger and they'll say, oh, I'm sorry, that's not me. Sorry, it is. It just came out. I mean, you wouldn't use that profanity if you didn't have it in your heart, in your soul. And that's why what we have to do is really rely upon God and really get down to the source of what makes us tick. And there are a lot of people, instead of just dealing with the symptoms, what they need is a heart transplant, right? They need to really learn what it means to turn their life over to God. If you've got bad water in a well, painting the pump isn't going to do any good. You've still got bad water in the well. If you've got a heart that isn't really clean or right, you're going to have a problem. That's why David said in Psalm 51, verse 10, create in me a clean heart, O God, and put a new and right spirit within me. And that's what we ultimately need to do if we're going to most of the time have these characteristics of love in our own hearts and then as we relate to others. I mean, think about it. You find somebody with a negative tongue, the problem is they got a fearful heart. You find someone with a boasting tongue, they've got an insecure heart. You find somebody with a judgmental tongue, they're just always judging everybody, they probably have a guilty heart, trying to make themselves look better by putting other people down. You find somebody that's hypercritical, they probably have a bitter heart. Find somebody with a filthy tongue, they've got an impure heart. On the other side, you got somebody that's always encouraging, they've got a happy heart. Find someone who's gentle, particularly under pressure, they've got a loving heart. Someone who's controlled, they've got a peaceful heart. And so what we need to ask God to do is create in us a clean heart, a heart that truly is submitted to God. And Jesus can take a hurting heart, a resentful heart, and take all that pain, sort of absorb it for us. And he says, I care about your pain. It matters to me. Let it go. Trust in me, and I can fill you up with my peace. And what a difference that will make in our lives. Maybe some of you saw on Facebook all the wonderful pictures of little Juniper Sage. I'm so glad you two were able to bring Juniper today. Beautiful, tiny little baby, bundle of joy. This was the picture I really liked of the two J's. This is Jesse and Juniper. I've never seen a more peaceful, joyful look on Jesse's face. I don't know whether little Juniper was crying before Jesse went to hold her here, but I've often noticed that when a baby is crying and then someone takes the baby and wraps it close, and the baby feels the warmth and the security up against another warm body, oftentimes that calms them and they stop crying. And as I was looking at this picture, I thought about how it relates to our lesson. If your heart is crying on the inside today, maybe it's because you've never really felt and accepted by faith the warmth and security that comes from embracing Jesus Christ. And the difference that makes when we feel the touch of the Master's hand. In just a few moments, we're going to sing the song, Let Him Have His Way With Thee. And that's a beautiful song. It talks about the idea of letting go of self and trusting in God to fill us up. And as we sing that song, I want you to think about the idea of repatterning your thoughts and reconditioning your heart and mind. So we can be filled with peace and joy. And if you're a person that struggles at times with anger, so many of us do, send me or the elders a note. Let us pray for you about it. And if you'd like to have some additional resources, talk to me privately and I'll give you some resources you might find helpful. So is there anybody here today who's ready to experience the warmth and the security that comes from embracing Jesus fully and submitting your life to him? If so, won't you come? As together we stand and we sing.